Blog Talk Radio.
It's January 30, 2022. Hello and welcome to Working for a Living Radio Show, where realists for change present opinions that matter. Tonight, we're joined by co-host Jeff Brown, and I'm your moderator, Leroy McKnight. Please remember, good leadership is never about power and control, but rather for the honor and privilege of serving the members in the interest of the membership. Working for a Living is syndicated on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Listen Now, Player FM, and follow us on Twitter. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, Leroy, I'm here.
Good, good.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear? Yeah, you should be able to hear me.
Yes. Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Well, we have a couple of guests we want to bring on. Here, they're in the switchboard already, and they have their hand raised. That's great, guys. Jeff, you want to talk about how your week went? Maybe some stuff. I don't know if you are up to speed on any of the things that are going on at Spring Hill or possibly Bowling Green. But if you want to try and address that, or we're going to talk a little bit about the judge a little later in Wisconsin, too. So told the judge told a worker he couldn't quit his job until the current employer hired and trained somebody in his place. So it's rather interesting. So why don't you carry the ball there for a minute? I'll get the guys queued in and bring them on here, introduce them. Okay?
All right. I'll start with the messages, comments, and emails. The first one is, thank you again for having me on your show on January 23rd. I always enjoy talking with Jeff Brown and Leroy. Submitted by PG. Jeff, I want to thank you for being on our show once again. Your comments and compliments are too kind. We always try our best to help our UAW members and retirees. Number two, regarding the new retirees OCT benefit, this has nothing to do with our benefits. And that comes from Gary Lee Simpson. We thank you for your comment. However, this is, in fact, a VIVA benefit. Either you are not trying to bust union sniping ignorantly or a bit too old to be making a Facebook post anymore. But this is a VIVA benefit confirmed by direct call to VIVA itself. Okay, Leroy.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. I see you're reading some of the emails there. I'm bringing the fellows on here. We're going to introduce them here in just a second, as soon as we know they're fully on the page, or on the show, rather. So please welcome to our show, Working for a Living Show, our special guest for the night, John Hartwell. He is the Career and Outreach Representative for the Operating Engineers Local 324, and please welcome Tim Ganton, Business Representative for Operating Engineers Local 324. Welcome, fellas. John, you want to lead it off here and start to tell us a little bit about your experience with the Operating Engineers, and then Tim can come in as you guys get working along there. So I'll ask some questions if I see an opportunity to do so. So go ahead, Tim, or John.
Yeah, Hey, thanks, Leroy. I appreciate you having us on tonight, Leroy and Jeff. So I'm with the Operating Engineers. I'm going on my 30th year as an Operating Engineer, and I'll tell you what, I can't imagine doing something better. I came in through through our apprenticeship program in the early 90s through an application, knew that I wanted to be in the construction industry, came in through apprenticeship, got some really good experience on a wide variety of job sites, finished up all my training, and went on to be a journeyman. worked in the field for quite a while and came back to work for the training center as an instructor, then later as apprentice coordinator, and now as an outreach representative. It's jobs like these, it's careers like these that mean a lot to the state of Michigan, right? We're going to have a lot of infrastructure money coming back in to do these repairs that you guys have all seen what our crumbling infrastructure looks like, and these are jobs that are going to be here in the future. So very proud to be a member of the operating engineers and have the opportunity to go through that process.
What's the day-to-day work like for an operating engineer, the kind of equipment they run and stuff like that, John?
So what we do is there's over 14,000 operating engineer members in the state of Michigan. We do cover the whole state of Michigan. So your day could vary very widely on what you do. We're on projects from powerhouses, auto plants, road work, bridges, all the underground sewer work that you see. It really varies. We're working on the Sioux Locks at this time. We're working on the Gordie Howe Bridge, right? So to get up in the morning, be able to get yourself to your job site, and knowing that we are statewide, there might be a little bit of traveling involved to get to a job. So you get up nice and early, you get to your job site, get your equipment up and running, and each day is a little bit different, right? You might be on a different piece of equipment, from cranes to excavators, large front-end loaders, rubber-tired backhoes. It's pretty incredible, and that's what I like about the industry, right? You don't have to up until a couple of years ago, I had no idea what a cubicle was or what an office was, right? You get to work outside. You get to work in all kinds of conditions, and you get to go to different job sites periodically, right? So you don't have the same drive to work all the time. And the camaraderie within the trades, the brotherhood system that we have out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, almost all my ex-in-laws now, but they're almost all of them were operating engineers, and one of them actually owned a company, UNI Pipeline. So, you know, they operate backhoes and bulldozers and cranes and all kinds of things. It's a really good job. So let's give Tim an opportunity to come in and say a few words, and then we'll get into maybe a few questions. Hi, Tim. You want to give us your
Hi, guys.
Good view evening. On the experience? Yeah. Good evening.
I'm actually into my 28th year now. I'm a third-generation union man, and now my son makes fourth. Predominantly, I was a crane operator, working all over the country, wind turbines in Kansas, Texas, Oregon, New York. And one day I decided to come back and work for the local. I've been a business agent for the last 2 years now, or 2.5 years. And my job now is helping assist members and contractors kind of get along and enforce an agreement. So you might know my Uncle Tim Beckles. He actually got me started down the union road as an iron worker, if you can believe it. And my dad wouldn't put up with that, so I slid over into the operators. My dad's a 55-year member. It's been a great run, and
right.
Yeah, that's all I got to
say. I do know your uncle, and I came from Youngstown, Ohio, as a lot of folks know on the show. But my first friend in Michigan, I moved to Harrison, was a member of the Blackledge family. And they're kind of renowned. I think one of them actually had one arm still climbing the steel into the, you know, 60, 70 stories up, putting steel up, you know. So the Blackledge family, I guess you're known, you know,
from
coast to coast. Yeah, they've been around for a long time. They're close friends of mine. In fact, they're his cousin is Benny. Everybody knows Benny, I think, that's been around the steel at all or any cranes. And he's, you know, just a character. So, but you mentioned that you can travel around the country with your card. So your card is here at your local, your union card. But, Tim, you've said that you can go all around the nation, right?
Yeah, we're actually an international local. I'm sure I actually got a call Friday from Local 793 in Ontario wanting 50 crane operators to come to Canada. But there's a process to do it. You can't just jump in your truck and drive and go to work. You have to clear in with the other locals. And, you get chasing these companies around and you go where there's work, you know. I mean, you can stay home and it gets a little tight around the house. It's time to pack the suitcase and hit the road, you know. You got to do it for your family.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, if you, because you're the business agent, so some of this on your side there. We're with Benny calling right now, so I've been on the other phone. So you keep your card here, but if you travel, you can work under your card that's here. But let's say you wanted to make your primary residence. You know, we know some folks from the Blackledge family, Dougie, that went out to Las Vegas, and he's out there now and on the iron worker side. And I don't know if his card's here or out there, but could you move an operating engineer card out to Las Vegas and work under that same card there?
Yeah, you can actually. It has to be okayed between both locals. You apply for a transfer, and you can transfer. We also do reciprocity and travel service where guys, you go to another local, and you basically pay them Adobe, or they get work and dues from you, and then they send everything else back home, you know. A lot of guys like that, too, you know. That way the money stays with the man. That's what they call it, you know. But, yeah, you can,
right.
You're free to travel anywhere.
Now, let's talk about pensions. You folks still have a pension there in your union, right?
Absolutely. We have our own pension.
Right.
Some of the other
ones pension
and
and my understanding, Tim, is that it's similar to the iron workers. I mean, I'm not as versed in the pensions of the operating engineers, but it does not coordinate with Social Security, does it? You get full pension and full Social Security. Is that correct?
Yep. We changed our – when you're 100% vested, like John – I don't know. John can probably go in 5 years, 100% unreduced.
Yeah.
Some guys got to go to 62, some guys 65. I technically could go at 58, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. So, but, to be clear to the listeners, and a lot of us are UAW members, and our pension is coordinated, you know, from down from $3,000, you know, in some cases, you know, $1,600, $1,700. They cut our pension once we get 62 and receiving Social Security. So instead of getting $3,000 plus $2,000, we're getting $3,000 plus, you know, after, what we'll say, $1,600, so, or $2,000 plus $1,600, I'm sorry. And so they're your Social Security plus your pensions, reduced pensions. So it's really an advantage to somebody that wants to be an operating engineer in the long haul, because on the backside of this, the pensions are not reduced. So you live a pretty good life, even in retirement, because, you know, right now it's about $3,000 for the pension-ish, you know, we'll call it, and a couple thousand, maybe $2,200 for security. So that's, you know, $5,200 a month. That's pretty good living, you know. So
mm-hmm.
And so that's an advantage for the operating engineers on the backside of this, you know, let alone the you know, the training and everything. Let's get back to John a little bit. John, would you tell us the process to apply for the apprenticeship program and what they can expect once they get accepted, and
sure,
and, all the training and things that's available, you know, that they're going to get.
Sure. So we offer a couple different apprenticeships, Department of Labor registered apprenticeships. So they have some really good meaning, and it's great to get that certificate once you graduate. One of them is heavy equipment operation, right? Cranes, bulldozers, like we talked about. We offer a three-year apprenticeship program, 6,000 hours in total. 95% of the time you're out in the field working, making money as an apprentice. Apprentices start out at 70% of what a journey person's going to make. So our average on our agreements is right around $20 an hour they would be starting out at, and then getting another $23 an hour in benefits on top of that, which is your Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Delta Dental, your pension, your annuity, vacation pay. So they're making good money to start out. Then every 1,000 hours that you put into the program, you get a 5% increase in pay, providing you're doing your training, which our training can be conducted at any one of four training sites that we have across the state of Michigan. Our largest training facility is out in Howell at 560 acres. And then we have a facility in Detroit. We have one up in the UP in Gladstone and our newest facility in Grand Rapids. So we try and make it convenient for our apprentices and journeymen to come in and train. Our other apprenticeship program would be heavy equipment technician, which is a mechanic, right? Somebody's got to fix all this big equipment that breaks down. That is a four-year apprenticeship program, 8,000 hours to complete it, and it starts out basically the same, right around $20 an hour at 70% of what a journeyman makes, with incremental raises as you go through the program. There's several ways, several opportunities to get started in these programs. We will do an online application process starting June 6th, and we'll run it through June 10th. So in order to qualify for the apprenticeship and get one of those applications, you could actually go to oe324.org right now and get on a pre-list, so we would notify you when those applications are available. An applicant must be at least 17 years of age at the time that they apply. They have to have a high school diploma or a GED, and we utilize WorkKeys test scores as an entry exam to come in. WorkKeys test scores can be obtained at most Michigan Works across the state or some of the community colleges. The good piece is there's a hot link right on our website under applications at the oe324.org that will give you the closest WorkKeys test center to where you reside. And the great part about the WorkKeys is it's math, it's reading for comprehension, and it's a graduated test, so it lines up perfectly with what we do. So it's not a huge obstacle for people coming in, and they also have WorkKeys training if you don't get the score that you need, and our scores are all listed online. Some of our other routes of entry into the program, one of the ones that we're really proud of is if you're a returning veteran in the military, we work through a program called Helmets to Hard Hats. It's H to H, and H to H would get you a direct entry into our process, so you would not have to put in an application, and we take those all the time. So two routes of entry. We're working on some routes of entry which are through pre-apprenticeship and apprentice readiness programs that you see throughout the state, like Access for All, Detroit Workforce of the Future, so that those are direct entry programs also. What we're really trying to do and what we've done is sped up the process for a person who wants to be an operating engineer and have this type of career. It used to be that it might take a couple of years from the time you did an application to the time that you came in. If you do an application in June now, some of those candidates are coming into our program 2 months later. That's how much the online piece has sped it up, and the Department of Labor has really worked with us good on that piece too. So there's opportunities out there, and as Tim will tell you too, we don't see the need for them going away anytime soon with our aging workforce. People like myself and Tim wanting to retire someday, right? Bring in a fresh group. So
right.
Well, I think Tim's cousin graduated a week ago Wednesday with his journeyman card. Is that right, Tim?
I guess he'd be cousin technically, but I call him my nephew, Garrett Nolan.
Okay.
Uncle Tim's grandkid.
Grandson, right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah so I remember when he started, it was in June, early in June, and I think it only took about, because, you know, you get overtime and stuff, right? So I think it's about 2.5 years to finish his journeyman's card. So I might stand corrected on that. It might have been longer than that, but it seemed like, to me, about 2.5 years. I know Tim was real proud, your uncle, that his grandson started a program, and his first job was over at one of our sister local unions plant, the Flint Truck Assembly, UAW Local 598. That was where his first apprentice work was at. So it was kind of nice to kind of follow his career, because he put up a lot of those, or helped put them up, the windmills up there by Mount Pleasant and south. So, yeah, so... So let's talk about prevailing wage a little bit. You're both probably well versed in this, and I would Tim, you want to explain what prevailing wage is?
Prevailing wage is, I usually say it's the wage that was set by the union. And that's the game plan everybody uses when they bid a job, like schools, universities, which we don't have anymore.
It's important for your
wage
base, right?
Absolutely. It's what the buyer has to be at. If you're going to bid this job, you got to pay a guy, say, $30 an hour. Now these companies can come in on a high school or in 1099 guys and pay them $12 an hour, you know, and our union contractors, they can't compete with that, you know. So a lot of these schools are not as good as they used to be, you know. And we actually bring the non-union wage up. The non-union guys, you know, I have a cousin who's a non-union insulator or abatement guy, and he hates that prevailing wage is gone because he makes less money now. We're trying to get it changed. It takes a while.
I happen to know, I mean, this comes up at the state level every now and then, and I don't know exactly where it's at. I know they've had some legislation in the last few years. I don't know if it was passed or not. I'll defer to you, but I want to address the thing I know about over in Muskegon County. There was a fellow over there, county commissioner, that was driving the Republican-led county commission, and they did away with the prevailing wage in Muskegon County for all time. Now, he's paid the price politically because we got involved. Some of the folks that I know and myself, and we made sure that he's not going to get reelected. So we're going to have to do some work over in Muskegon County to get that reversed, because it takes 2/3 vote to reverse county commission action. So, but there's people working on this, we lament a little bit that the trades over in the Muskegon area didn't jump on this guy when this was all going on, and we were all saying, well, where they at, you know. But just know that you have a lot of support to keep the prevailing wage in place, because this is, you know, it's very, very important in order to make sure that tradespeople in all the trades are able to continue to make the high wages that we deserve for our skilled, you know, your skilled work, and our work in general as a union member, you know. So I don't know if you knew about the Muskegon area county commission issue or not,
I can tell you that Ellen Beal and Pete Boshoff, Ellen's been on our show. She's an education expert, but she's a long-standing Democrat in Ingham County. Now she's over there in Muskegon County. I won't give out her address, but we visit pretty regular with her husband, Pete, and myself. And Pete and I talk on the phone a lot. And so we coordinated an effort over there to assure that he was gone, because he's a real piece of work over there. And, you know, she was, as you may or may not know, she was a Lansing City Council member, elected, and an elected Ingham County Commissioner at one time as well. So she's a pretty good politician in her own right. But they're working hard over there to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen. So if you can, push your brothers and sisters over there in the Muskegon area, I'm sure that that help would be well received there to try and turn
Absolutely.
That county commission. You know, you see how it's important. Politics is in everything we do, brothers and sisters, everything. So if, so you're now aware of that, Tim, so and John. So if you guys got any friends over there, you know, just kind of give them a nudge a little and say, hey, we got to get this turned back around again so we have a prevailing wage, any of this county work. Just one of those things that's out there. And, you know, we got a lot of Republicans
our
agents, in our go ahead.
I just said I'll reach out to our agent. We have an agent that covers that area over there, and I'll see if him and Ellen have made contact in the past.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're around. I mean, Ellen and Pete, they're always got their nose in everything wherever they're living at, and we coordinate quite a bit. So, and she's been a good friend for many years. I'm going to say 30 plus. Years that we've been working together. I've never been actually elected, but, you know, as you know, from behind the scenes working on a lot of stuff. So that's important. And the prevailing wage thing, if you don't have it, all of a sudden somebody's got a bid and a job over, like in Muskegon, and they're paying, $12, $14 an hour, no benefits, that really undercuts your union. So it's important that we all work as sisters and brothers together in the union movement to assure that all of our jobs are in good stead here and making all the money we can. And the rules, the government rules at local, state, and federal are favorable to us unions. So I think that's very important. I'd be remiss if I didn't address the prevailing wage issue, and we're always fighting that thing, seems like. And I can't think of anything else that I have a question on. Jeff, you got any questions there for John or Tim?
No, I don't have any questions, but I think our listeners should really pay attention to what they're saying, because these are good jobs, and we encourage people to take a skill change training, because auto worker jobs in the plants are definitely going away. So we encourage our listeners to pay attention to what's going on, so they know what to do to get one of these jobs. That's all I got, Leroy.
Right. Yeah. To follow up on what Jeff's talking about, the third Friday of August, Elon Musk, the owner of Tesla, came out and introduced a humanoid. It weighs 125 pounds. It can pick up 45 pounds center mass and 10 pounds out to the end of its arms. They're going to perfect this to replace humans that do repetitive, redundant work. So that's many of our UAW jobs in the plants. So everybody that's out there, poking around and talking about work to rule and all these things, you better come up with a better plan, because the plan is your job's going away, and how we best protect work for our members and our children. And this is an opportunity right here that we're presenting with you with the operating engineers of Michigan, and they have them, what, in every state, fellas? Are they in every state, John?
They are. They are, for sure.
The training and stuff, sure. Yeah. So there's an opportunity nationwide for you to get your kids or anybody that you think that's worthy to have a job like this. You know, we don't want, somebody that's got a substance abuse problem running a, $2 or $3 million crane with, 100 people around them. That's not a recipe for success. So if you're going to get somebody and point them this way, make sure it's a good person, all right? So, John, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you for having us on the show. I appreciate it, and you're exactly right. These career opportunities, I'm glad we could present them. Thank you.
We're happy to have you here. We're trying to do some cross-union solidarity here. We do it almost every day anyhow, but it needs to be out public so that there's – and the one thing that Tim's uncle and I discuss from time to time, that we need to present a united front that is seamless, that you can't – the public can't see any cracks in our wall of solidarity. So, there's always something that we might have our disagreements, but we need to do those behind closed doors and come up with solutions that satisfy everybody. So, Tim, you got anything to add to everything you've said here tonight?
The only thing I would add is definitely over the next 10 years, it's looking wall-to-wall work and with battery plants and with hundreds of millions going back into these auto plants to switch them over. Get signed up and check our website out, and we're definitely, all the trades are going to feel a squeeze on having a shortage of workers. So,
oh yeah,
on the trains is the one that wins.
Right. We're featuring operate engineers tonight. We really have a lot of affinity. Like I said, my own in-laws were all operating engineers. My own two sons are journeyman concrete finishers, and they were down, like you're talking about, the plants that are coming in the past 10 years. They did a lot of work down there in the flat work on all the auto plants that were built in the south. This work is similar in all the other trades, but we're featuring the operating engineers, one of the higher paid trades out there. They get a lot of overtime. There's lots of stipends and things that they get from time to time as well. And a lot of that used to be, maybe not so much now, was a write-off if you were working out of town. Anything over 50 miles, it used to be. But I don't know how that is, and I'll defer to other people for that one. Either John or Tim have any thought on that they could even write off their expenses when they're out of town?
Change of taxes, yeah. It, like, we couldn't even write our mileage off 2 years ago, So.
Right. Well, it used to be called unreimbursed employee business expense, and the former president did away with that, so the teachers now can't write off their taxes, pencils and paper that they buy for their students out of their own pocket. And that's just, horrible. And of course, as I just indicated, if you had a trailer that you took or an apartment that you had to get where your job site was, you used to be able to write all that off. So I don't know where that's all at now. So there's a lot of benefits. And again, we got a lot of work to do to get a lot of stuff back that we lost in the last, or 1 to 5 years ago with the other president that was there. He took a lot away from his brothers and sisters, and you just might not see it in yours, but he took a lot away from us, I'm telling you. So, well, thank you for coming on, John, and thank you for coming on, Tim Ganton and John Hartwell from the Operating Engineers. John is the career and outreach representative, and Tim Ganton is the business agent for the Operating Engineer Local 324. So thanks for coming on, fellas. And if you don't have anything else, I'll put you you can listen. And if you want, just hit your one on your screen, on your phone again, and I'll see that you want to come back on and address anything. But I'll put you in listen. You don't have to stay at the end of the show if you don't want to. It's fine. But we really appreciate having you on here and talking about your trade and how people can come into it. And it's an amazing trade. I mean, I am telling you. And they get a lot of overtime, and it's highly skilled work. So thank you for coming on, fellas, and we'll see you around the neighborhood, huh?
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Solidarity, brothers.
Yep. Solidarity. You betcha. All right. Okay. Well, there's John Hartwell and Tim Ganton, and we enjoyed having them on the show. If they have anything else that they want to talk about, they can just hit one on their keypad, and it give me an indication they want to come back and address anything. So, Jeff, I don't know where you were at with this. I mean, what are your thoughts on the operating engineers now that you've got the chance to listen to them a little more?
We need definitely more people to get into the skilled trades. Not everybody is capable of going to college, so we encourage folks to enter these type of jobs because they're going to be around.
Right.
They're needed everywhere. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Be a long time before they. Yeah. Long time before they have a robot to run a crane, huh? Right.
Well, they do have. Some plants do have something, so it's like I said, auto workers are going to be mighty slim in the future, and that won't be too far off.
Right, that's exactly right. They just changed the electric cars. They have some plans to simultaneously reduce our workforce. Even though they said last week they're going to hire 19,000 new people, I think it was General Motors, for the electric plants. But what are they going to do with the existing, normally aspirated plants where they have engines? So those are going to go away. So, it's fun having them on. I really appreciate it. I've met Tim and probably John, but I don't think John knows that or – well, I probably wouldn't, but he makes all the functions. And I met Tim several years ago at a legislative event for the Michigan Building Trades. I don't make too many things like that, but I was asked and encouraged to go to it. And I met Tim there, and he's a nice, nice, caring union officer. And I really appreciate all he does for his members and for the members and for all the politics that are out there that we all work behind the scenes to try and finesse things to make sure that we have the very best politicians out there for our membership and hold those people to account once we get them elected. So he's out there doing that nearly every day, if not every day. So I was pleased to meet him years ago, and I'm happy to have him again on the show here. And it's all about connections, so. We appreciate him a lot. So, I don't know where you got down to the email.
On the number three, Leroy.
Three? Is it my turn?
Number three. Yeah.
Okay. Is that me? It says you, but I'll take it. How's that? Mike, do three and four. How's it? Because you did the first two. How's that?
Yep.
This is regarding last week's show. I loved hearing all of the wonderful information about the diversity and inclusion from PG. Thank you for having her on your show. Many listeners expressed that, and of course their names are withheld in this instance. The other fellow's name we put out there because he was just being stupid, but most of the time we withhold their names. That guy there, the previous email number two, I think it was, he actually said our new over-the-counter benefit wasn't part of our benefit program. And I don't know what he's smoking or drinking, but he's so far out there just trying to snipe at one of my posts out there informing our members of this new really nice benefit of $150 or $50 if you just have the traditional. But it's a real nice benefit. I talked to Aviva about that, so it is part of the benefit plan, and I confirmed that firsthand. So it's good to hear from the folks on this email that they liked what they heard last week and how they learned about the difference between just diversity and inclusion. And that's very nice to hear from everybody, and we thank you for that. You know, I remind everybody that when you're in the military, you are told on day two that the guy next to you, no matter what color, creed, anything about him, religion, he's going to save his life someday. So you better put all your discriminations, you know, leave them at the post, when the post gate when you come in, and never pick them up again. And a lot, some of us have done that, and some haven't done so good at it. But, you know, when you got your life out there and you're counting on that guy next to you, you better realize that that it doesn't matter if he's black, white, green, Chinese, no-knees, or Japanese, you know. So just better respect him and take care of him, too, or her. So this number four, Jeff and Leroy, I know you've been together doing this radio show for almost 6 years, and the other factory show 10-plus years, and all of a sudden I'm seeing many public Zoom meetings and other radio shows. What's going on with that, and are they doing more harm than good being withheld? I got to tell you, this appears to be the result of the referendum vote that you all made, we all made. We all voted, I said. Well, not all of us, but a number of us voted, and for the one member, one vote, and this is the result you're seeing. You know, as we said on previous radio shows, you can expect some 35 to 50 candidates for each of the 13 positions, and not just from Ford, Chrysler, or Stellantis, or GM, as we're now a very small part of our union. The percentage of the Detroit 3 is around 14% of our union, total union. And, yes, oftentimes they're doing more harm to the overall union movement than they're doing good. And I'll reference one of the things, maybe two, that I saw in the past week or so. One of the interviewers had a candidate, and the candidate had committed to being a union supporter, and his family being a union supporters and members. So the comment was made admonishing the person about his upbringing in union. And it was an unnecessary admonishment that was off-putting to the candidate visibly and off-putting to the general public that heard that. You can drive more people away if you're doing that. And the other thing is you got to tell them what we want. You know, you don't let them just ramble out there. One guy made a comment and was, well, you know, I want to have treaties that require a union in them. Well, first of all, most of the treaties have been already negotiated and signed before 1993, when GATT was signed, December 8th, and that put us in a non-competitive position forever. So the notion that you're going to have too many treaties is not all that big a deal, because you're not going to have many more. The other thing is, if you're going to hold up, you know, monies, trade monies, and any monies that you might be given another country, and there's a lot of, you know, good and bad about that. We shouldn't be borrowing money to give it to somebody else, right? So, but having said that, if we are going to give aid or trade aid to another country, you got to have a business before you can have a union, right? You simply can't have a union if there's no company there. What you need is a commitment from the other country to have legislation. So this guy went off on his own little, you know, crusade to have unions in other countries before the cart ever got there. Got to have a company before you can have a union, right? And you can say, you know, governments don't mandate unions. Our own government doesn't mandate unions. We fight with them all day long. You just heard that. So the people that are out there doing more harm than good ought to really start to run some things by others before they go out there half informed. There was a couple other things, and I'm not going to get into the minutiae of all that, but that's a couple that are really glaring. We don't need to be beating up people that have already committed to be with us, right? So, so anyhow, I guess I'm just pretty distraught over that, because we have a lot of people on here and on our show, and over the time we've had a lot of interviews with some of our union brothers and some politicians and others, and you know, we always try to bring out the best of everybody. And if the politician is wrong in their thinking, it's up to us to make sure that they understand the rules. And if you don't understand the rules, you shouldn't be out there in the public forum. It's just that simple. So I want to let everybody know that Working for a Living supports our sister unions, as you saw tonight. It locked out steel workers in Texas, the striking mine workers in Alabama, IBEW Local 3 on strike in New York. Of course, we had some things going on at Spring Hill. Maybe we'll talk about those a little later, and also at Bowling Green. I must say I'm not up to speed as much on that as I am on the Spring Hill, although I do know a little bit about it. Some of the other caucuses are working with the Bowling Green folks, and they're a little more up on it than I am. But for now, we'll talk about Spring Hill a little bit. So, Jeff, you want to get into your definition? It's kind of a theme for our show tonight. You there, Jeff?
Yeah. Sorry.
We can't hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Cross solidarity refers to the ties that bind people together as one. Theoretically, it is a practice that two go hand in hand, not only with the individual unions, but also between all unions. It means standing together, brother with brother, understanding and respecting the rights of all unions and their members. That's kind of what we did tonight with the our guest. You know, we have right. to stick together.
Yeah. Cross-union solidarity. This week's quote, I'll take that, is about cross-union solidarity as well. At the core, labor unions, we are working men and women unified as one force. Despite any personal differences that may exist between us, we have banded together to protect and improve the lives of workers. We rise up together for the greater good We defend one another like family. That's a quote by Sue Kern. Cross-union solidarity, and we need that a lot. We need it. So, Jeff, you want to get into your education on the UAW Constitution this evening?
Yeah, I'm going to hit Article 10, Section 7 and 9. Section 7, no member of any local union shall be eligible to hold any elective or appointed position in this international union or any local union in this international union if she or he is a member of a subservient to political organizations such as communist, fascist, or Nazi organizations, which owes its allegiance to any government other than the United States or Canada, directly or indirectly. Section 9, the acceptance of an elective or appointed office or position or nomination to any elective office or position by any member who is ineligible under Section 7 or 8 of this article is an offense against the union, punishable by penalty up to, including expulsion. It just says that you can't be any organizations, communist, fascist, or Nazi organizations, and hold an office, either elected or appointed. So let's keep that in mind when election time comes around later this year. So we do have a big issue with this.
Correct. And
Leroy?
For those, yeah, I'm here. For those that might wonder what Section 8 is of the UAW Article 10, Section 8, because in Section 9 it refers to Section 7 or 8. You know what 7 is. You can't be a communist in our union, you know, or subservient in any way to that organization. Okay, and directly or indirect. And you may be, according to 9, punishable by a penalty up to and including expulsion. Okay, so this is an interesting thing. But 8, 7, you know what it is, but 8 deals with anybody that's involved with illegal rackets or numbers in the plant, involved in that, I guess. Doesn't have to just be in the plant. So you can't hold office if you are part of that, and you can be expelled out of our union for that. It is a serious matter. It is something that is ongoing. There's been an email written that deals with that in regard to some others. I was a recipient of that email passed on to me, and it's pretty detailed and factual. And there are people that are going to be held to account because this went the original one. I saw it addressed to the president, the overseer of the election committee, or the elections court appointed, and the adjudicator court appointed. So, and I think there were some 500 local union presidents, chairpersons, et cetera, on the distribution. So this is widely known what's going on. And the president of our current international union has to address that. It does not need to come by and through local union action, Article 31 or 33. It can be, it is required to be taken up upon notice of the international president, required to take it up and investigate it. So we'll see. We haven't heard anything on that this any time lately. So I want to talk about this stuff that's going on down there in Spring Hill. You know, the local union Bargaining Committee has agreed to allow the paint system and another thing, I think it's material, to be outsourced to, you know, I think it's GM Subsystems, LLC, for a lot less money. And the members down there are all up in arms over it, and they ought to be. This is a function of local union elected leadership. That's the only parties that can agree to that happening. It is imperative that you elect people that you can trust not to do such things and not to bend to the pressures from management, the corporation, and or our own international. We had that at Lordstown. And some other things, by the way. But this occurred there. Now, somebody come in and made a comment, work to rule. Well, you heard the International Operating Engineers on a show earlier, and my father-in-law at the time, he's deceased and been a long time divorced myself from that family, I guess. He used to call it the wobble. Put the wobble on him. Slow down. Okay? Do only what's required according to your job description. And that was in the operating engineers. And then the Region 2 director for Ohio came up with work to rule. And there's people out there today claiming it's theirs. Well, it's not theirs. It was coined as work to rule by the regional director, Region 2, in the 80s, I think. maybe the 90s, early 90s. And he was kind of forced out. But that's his opportunity. And what that is, you know, work to rule and do what you're supposed to do according to the job description and no more. Now, I can tell you, I hired in the plant where the sit-down strikes were initiated, where they started, and that plant had a strong adversarial worker management relationship. And I had, as a young worker, guy come by, slow down. The whole line slowed down till he got what he wanted. He said, it's okay. And we went back to doing what we were supposed to do, regular, normal stuff. Now, later in my career, me and a young, snot-nosed general supervisor were constantly locking horns. And we worked through the Christmas holiday, and we had a set rate, an order selector driver, where you go up with the order basket, and you're up there, depending on which truck you had, 20 to 40 feet up in the air, and you got a little small, 5 foot by sometimes 8 foot, but mostly about 5 foot by 6 foot platform, the rollers underneath you, where you'd move that truck. And it's dangerous up there. And you go up and down to pick parts out of the bins out in the aisle. Well, we were doing 72 through the Christmas holiday, and that's a pretty comfortable rate. And that was about the rate that we had been doing for years. But he wanted us doing 95. So first day of the after the holiday, back in January, I'm doing 72 like I'm supposed to. And the first hour, he didn't say much. And the second hour, he come by and he says, I'm placing you on notice, subject to discharge, for work slowdown. work stoppage. I can just about guarantee that the asshats spewing work to rule have never been placed on notice subject to discharge, because that's what they're talking about when they tell you that. The guy that's spewing it to all of those folks now spewed it about 6 years, 7 years ago, and he said for people to go out and sabotage equipment as they performed their work to rule. A good union brother by the name of Richard Dick Dangin called him out and said, you're going to get people fired with your bullshit. Stop. And he went away with his tail between his legs and hadn't been heard from since after Dick Dangin died. And now he's cropped up again, spewing his stuff, work to rule, around forever. And it's usually on the down low. When you start posting it on Facebook, and then the guy goes back into plant and starts work to rule, and he just was in a conversation with Asshat, he's going to get fired. It's not our job to get people fired. Again, there's people out there doing more harm than good, trying to make themselves sound important. Just doing my job as my assignment was, safely. I was placed on notice subject to discharge for a slowdown. Now, of course, I was a high-level elected union officer, one of the top four in the local union at the time, and the plant came to a stop over that. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for helping out. And my notice of discharge that they were intended to do went away. So be careful of this work to rule. I commend the brothers that come in there and said, the one brother said, I've been here 38 years, and I've never seen it work. The issue down there isn't work to rule. It's union elected union officials that kowtow to management and gave the ship away. And there's a lot of them out there. Some of them just want to do it for political purposes. Change our country from democracy to communism for our members. Be careful who you elect. And that can be no better seen than at Spring Hill, Tennessee, right now. So, I got to tell you, we got a lot of work to do, and this one member one vote didn't help us. And you're about to see that with all the stuff that everybody's doing. They're going to wind up getting half the people fired before it's all said and done. And you can thank, I wrote an email about it. You know, how would you like to have 13 elected people that don't know each other, some that hate each other, and they certainly won't work together? And our, as we talked earlier, the wall with no cracks in it will be ever apparent on our executive board once we elect a new one. some that have no experience, don't have a clue what they're doing, never held office, never been on notice for discharge, for work to rule. Sometimes I like to just slap that guy upside the head. That's what he needs. Wake the F up. Stop trying to get people discharged. He knows who I'm talking about. Arms reach, brother. That box covers the Spring Hill issue and work to rule. I know they're trying to get some, they want to outsource and transfer some stuff around down there in Bowling Green, and I don't know all the particulars, but I wish them well there because, you know, we've long talked about the notion that Mary Barras wants to have 80% capacity utilization, and it's well known that the Bowling Green plant is down around and below 30% capacity utilization, and been long fought that they try and do something like this down there. So fighting it is a good thing. I don't know how it's going to turn out. It's one of her goals, you know, to increase capacity utilization at all the facilities. So just be aware, okay, that's going on. And just something that we've talked about, I've talked about with some of our team members over time. So we all are praised to that. Now you, in the general listenership here, can also know that. Okay, Jeff, you got any closing comments for our show tonight? We're about an hour.
No, I don't, Leroy. We had a good show.
Okay.
And I think the guys, our guests, were really informative. So,
oh, yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay. I think I'm real happy that they accepted to come on. And, you know, I think they're very informative to our listeners. And as jobs morph and our auto worker jobs start to go away because of these humanoids that we talked about, these operating engineer jobs are going to be around for a long time. And they're high-wage jobs. You can go anywhere in the world and work with them, as he just said. You got 50 guys going to Canada if they can, you know, work out the kinks on it. So, and that's, you know, again, you're working with government. You know, you're going to have somebody that's not friendly or you want somebody that is friendly. You know, it's your choice, folks. Brothers and sisters, you know, you got to start thinking about that. And I'm just saying everybody that we support better be working worker friendly. Okay, and we didn't have that before. And you can all pound salt up your ass to think that it is. It didn't happen. And somebody said out there out loud, Democratic Party's done more damage to this country than anybody else. Well, I beg to differ. We got to pick a side somewhere that's going to be on our side because the damn thing's so divided. And the other side ain't helping us. And you're about to see it. One of the posts I made was, it's because of the guys, well, we didn't talk about that judge up there in Wisconsin. We've got to finish that up, I guess. It's because of people like him and some others that we've seen some bad judges making decisions against us that we need to have worker-friendly governors and presidents of the United States because they're eventually going to appoint somebody locally, and you want a friendly person there that gets appointed. And the governors do the appointing for those vacancies in the state, midterm vacancies. And, of course, you're now seeing, you know, what's going on at the Supreme Court. And women's rights are being torn apart, workers' rights being torn apart. And we get an opportunity, maybe, to put in a worker-friendly Supreme Court judge. We'll see. We'll see. So this judge up there, I want to just real quick address this judge in Wisconsin. And, I didn't commit names to memory, but I'm going to tell you the issue. Young, a worker had opportunity to get another job for more money, you know, more desirable job. And he quit, put in notice to quit, and was going to go to a new job in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks notice, right? That's what we're all supposed to, we've been told to put in. He put 2 weeks notice in, and his employer went straight to the court and filed suit for him not to be able to quit and have to stay there until the old employer hire somebody and train him so that he can quit. Well, of course, then the job he was going to go to is no longer there. They hired somebody else, didn't they? So one of the people in one of the threads said on one of the social media said, well, you know, got to sue the judge. Well, judges don't get sued very often, but employers do. For the lost wages, from the time that he was told to until the time he could have quit and went, and for the lost wages after the job is no longer there indefinitely, I would believe those lost wages should be sued for. And you see a few of those, and it'll stop that crap. In other words, from the time that he was mandated to stay there, the difference in wages until the employer got somebody hired and trained, but not only that, because the other job is no longer there now, and he affected that in a negative way, the employer did, the employer's now responsible, in my opinion, for the lost wages for all time until the man retires at some point. It would happen to be a guy, so I'm going to say man. But it could be anybody with this law, and we don't know if it was a precedent-setting case or not. Again, judges need to be worker-friendly, and they haven't been. I had a circuit court judge during court for the VEBA where I was sitting there intervening plaintiff against General Motors, Ford, and then Chrysler, then later FCA and now Stellantis. And the judge looked at me, and he addressed me without saying my name, that the court is what it is today, and it's likely not going to be friendly to this petitioner. Until the makeup of the courts change, you can expect the same back-of-the-hand treatment that you're about to get. And they rule against us. My attorney. They rule against my attorney and myself. The Ford attorney was asked to go, and he said, oh, Ford attorney is happy to go last. And then he admonished the judge, the senior judge, for having voted for the salary workers at General Motors in 1996, some 10 years prior to, 11, 12 years prior to this particular case at the circuit court. Admonished the judge for having done that and told him in very clear terms, you shouldn't do that here. The Ford attorney said that out loud in open court. Threatened the judge, in my mind. Okay, and it's you, the voters, that can change that. I'm just giving you experiential examples so that you know the shoes I walk in and have walked in. So I hope the young man, I'm going to reach out to him, see if I can catch up with him and tell him to consider suing his employer for all those damages They are substantial damages, by the way, in my opinion. And we've got some labor-friendly lawyers running around still, so maybe one of them will take it on contingency, because it appears to me to be slammed up. We'll see what happens. With that said, Jeff, do you have any comments on that?
No, that's just unreal, Leroy. Never heard of that before.
I shake my head.
Judge making people, it's just unbelievable.
Well, they're elected, you know. They get elected somehow.
Yeah, they get elected.
Yeah, or appointed. I mean, federal judges appointed, and some of the local, state-level judges get appointed. The county, and state get elected. You know, you got your district and your circuit and your appellate court and your Supreme Court. They're all elected, but they get appointed sometimes by the governor, and once they're appointed, it's next to impossible to remove a sitting judge. Next to impossible. You know, I got one I'm going to work on, but, we'll see how that goes. Anyhow, that's enough for tonight, I think, for our listeners. So let's close the show now, and thank you to all the global listeners, to listeners in Canada and Mexico, all of our U.S. union and non-union listeners, certainly all of our UAW listeners. If you found value in this show, please just tell one more person about us. Have fun. Stay safe in the coming week. God bless each and every one of you. And God bless the United States of America. Good night, listeners. Good night, Jeff. Thanks for being around here.
Good night.
Cheers.
Yep. Good night.
Good night.